Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Oh, my darling. Happy birthday.
Dad, guess what? You know my friend Amanda?
Yep.
Her cousins asked us to spend vacation with them in Paris. I really, really want to go. Hi, Daddy.
You were supposed to call me when you land.
There's someone here.
What?
Oh, my God, they got Amanda. They called me.
All right, listen to me. Go to the next bedroom. Under the bed.
Tell me when you're there.
Yeah.
Now, the next part is very important. They're going to take you. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it.
You have a 96-hour...
What?
To never find her.
No.
But if you don't, I will look for you.
Where is she?
I will find you.
The clip you just heard is from the movie Taken. It's about human trafficking. Most of us can't fathom the atrocities happening right in our own communities. And while this is a difficult topic, it's critical we bring light into this very dark place. We need to educate ourselves about it to protect our loved ones, and we need to work in whatever way we can to free those that have been taken. Here to talk about it is Kathy Macias. She's written a book called Deliver Me from Evil. Although Kathy's book is fiction, this subject is no joke. She spent a great deal of time researching human trafficking, and she's here today to talk about it. Kathy is a multi-award-winning writer who's authored nearly 40 books. A former newspaper columnist and string reporter, Kathy's taught creative and business writing in various venues and has been a guest on many radio and television programs. She's a popular speaker and teacher, and we're blessed to have her here. Kathy, welcome to Heartline.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Deliver Me from Evil is the first book in your Freedom series. Can you tell us a little bit about the topic and why you chose to write about human trafficking?
Well, you know, I get asked quite a bit why I choose to write about such dark subjects. And I always explain to people, really, I don't write about dark subjects. I write about the light that shines in the darkness. And because I'm kind of known for doing those types of topics in my fiction, I was actually talking with my publisher as I was winding up the last series on the persecuted church, and she said, where do you want to go next? What topic are we going to tackle next? And as we kind of threw ideas back and forth, she actually is the one who suggested human trafficking. And I knew about it, but I didn't know how widespread it was. It was something that kind of happened far off, and I thought it was terrible. But I, you know, as I said, I didn't realize that it was so prevalent and widespread and right here in our own country. So I agreed to do some initial research, and I did, and then when I found out that it went on in every state in the union, and it was just, there really wasn't a country in the world who wasn't touched by it, that's when I came back to her and said, yes, let's tackle this thing. It really needs to be exposed every place we can.
What sort of statistics exist to validate your claim that human trafficking is the second largest illegal business in the world? That's shocking.
It is shocking. It's horrifying. The only thing that actually exceeds it and may very well be passed up by it is illegal drugs, and then right behind human trafficking is illegal arms sales. This human trafficking thing is about a $32 billion industry worldwide every year. And that's a lot of money, and it is primarily organized crime, so it's a real tough thing to combat and to fight. Right now, there are actually more people held in some form of human trafficking around the world than at any time in human history. 27 million is the estimate that you get at most, almost every agency that monitors this sort of thing. And right here in the United States, they estimate, a conservative estimate, is that there are somewhere in the vicinity of 300,000 minors being held in sexual slavery in our country right now. And those are some pretty horrifying statistics.
Absolutely, they are. So for folks who don't know anything about this subject, can you explain the point of human trafficking and what actually goes on? I mean, you said it's, you know, I'm sure drug-related, mafia-related maybe. Is anything connected with the mafia on this?
Yes, any sort of organized crime has definitely got their hands in this horrible thing. And human trafficking, I should explain, too, is not just sexual slavery. Very often that's the one thing we think of, but of course there are people held around the world and even here in this country for labor, unpaid labor, or so low paid that they can never buy their way out of it. The sexual slavery is certainly a huge part of human trafficking. And then there are also things like, and this is, you know, almost horrific, too horrific to even imagine, but involuntary organ donations. People are kidnapped and harvested for things like that. All of that is entailed in human trafficking, so you can almost begin to imagine the horrific possibilities here and the extent of the money involved. There's a huge market for organ donations that, you know, people are on waiting lists and they can't get them, and so they turn to things like this in order to do that. And so with all of these different aspects entailed, you can see that human trafficking takes on really, really connotations of what it means and what it can actually do to people and people's lives around the world.
So if they're doing human trafficking for organ donation, are these people being killed? Or are they just, like, put them to sleep? I mean, I've seen that in movies, and take out an organ.
Actually, both, yes. If it's an organ that can, you know, obviously the person can
live without. Yeah, not kill you, yeah.
Right, but, then you know, if someone needs a heart and you're picked to donate that, whether you want to or not, obviously that's the end of your life. So for the most part, anyone involved, their chances of getting out whatever area of human trafficking they're involved in, whether it's the organ donations, whether it's sexual slavery, whether it's...
What happens to these folks, Kathy?
You know, that's the heartbreaking thing. In the beginning, for the most part, almost all of them are hoping and praying for someone to come and rescue them. I mean, that is the initial reaction, this disbelief that they could be in such a situation, whether it's they're there because they were kidnapped, or whether in many cases they're sold into it, or whether maybe they were just duped or trapped into such a thing. Whatever reason, however they ended up there, their first thought when they realize how horrible it is, what they're caught up in, is that they're just begging and praying for someone to come and rescue them. Well, their captors know this. And their initial and their first hard-hitting tactic is to, they can get them to feel hopeless. Then they will get them to the point where they could actually even unchain them, open doors, and they will not try to escape. They have no hope left, and that's the ultimate purpose of their captors. As a result, very few of them ever escape alive, and if they do, they're usually so damaged that it takes extensive ministry to bring them to a place of healing.
Yeah, in the book you talk about how this one girl, one of your characters, was her parents actually sold her into the slavery, and her uncle was the one who was kind of calling the shots and doing all those things with her, and part of it was intimidation. I mean, he had her so intimidated by physical abuse and verbal abuse that she was just frozen.
Yes, and this is so common, really sad. Not only that it's common that they intimidate these people to the point where they don't even know how to protect themselves or how to try to escape or anything anymore, but the fact that children are sold into this from countries where there is just abject poverty, maybe too many children already, and especially in countries where girls are not held in the same esteem as boys. It is not at all uncommon for a family who maybe already has too many mouths to feed and then another girl is born into the family for them to just go ahead and sell this child, you know, for the cost of maybe a month's worth of rice or something just to keep the rest of the family alive and never see the child again.
Wow. Well, a lot of people think that this sort of thing only goes on in other countries, yet your book seems to imply otherwise. Can you talk about that?
You know, that was specifically why I set the book the way I did, because, as I said, when I first started researching it, I'm thinking third world countries, okay, horrible thing, not here in this country. And then as I began to research and learn about it and realize that, you know, it's in our own backyard, especially I live in Southern California, not far from San Diego, one of the main ports where very often people are brought in for this, for these purposes. That's when I decided, you know, my main story needs to take place here so readers will understand how commonplace it is. And so the main story does take place in the San Diego area with a subplot taking place in the Golden Triangle of Thailand, which is a huge area for drugs and prostitution and sex slavery. And I wanted to, not only in the first book, but throughout the entire three-book series, to have these two parallel stories begin to weave together and to come together at the end so that it really ties it together and readers would understand it happens here. It could be going on in my neighborhood and I wouldn't know about it. That's one of the things people say to me all the time. This is impossible. It couldn't be going on here.
But
I wouldn't know about it. And it is. And when you go to, I had a conference call with the Department of Homeland Security about this not too long ago, and they have a video on their website that's called In Plain Sight, because they want to educate people of what to watch for, how to recognize signs of someone being trafficked or this sort of thing going on in their neighborhoods. This is how common it is that the government has actually produced a video to educate us on this.
Well, that's the next question I was going to ask you. How do you watch for it? Are these people targeted? Do they have like a set of people in the organization that just watch for small children or whoever they need and they target that person?
That very often happens, and part of the thing that we're trying to do is to educate parents what to watch for and how to just build in safety measures in their own children that are age appropriate. We obviously don't want them to become terrified and paranoid of going outside. But because there are people watching for this sort of thing, just for that kind of an opportunity, for the child that maybe peels off from the group and heads down an alley to take a shortcut, or as I show in my book, these two young girls who are at the beach, these two young teenagers, one of them goes to the restroom, never returns. It's not just part of a story. These are the things that happen. And one of the primary things is that some teenage girl who's maybe already held in this and is so mind-controlled by her captors that they even allow her to attend school and to befriend other young girls and to invite them over. And this is so important for parents to understand. You need to know the friends that your children are hanging out with and their families, and you don't say, sure, go on over and spend the night. You may not hear from them again. And this is, I know it's scary, and again, I don't want to make people paranoid, but these are things we need to really learn and be aware of. Watch these kind of videos that the Department of Homeland Defense has put out there for us. Help us to understand what we're looking for, how we can protect our own children and children in our other neighborhoods that might not be ours, but that we care about.
Sure. I'm thinking about the movie Taken with Liam Neeson. That was an incredible movie and very eye-opening in terms of this whole thing. And one thing that I remembered was that they were really drugging these girls when they took them into sexual slavery. Is that usually the case? They were drugged up bad, so they would be able to, I guess, perform these acts and kind of not know what they were doing, or at least be so intimidated that they wouldn't try to escape.
That's definitely one of the things that they do to these young people when they're first caught. I, too, saw that movie and thought there were a lot of good points to it. My only concern was that it kind of perpetuated the idea that it did take place somewhere else because it was outside of our country. But, yes, definitely they are taken and they are drugged, beaten, starved, threatened not only that, you know, if you try to escape, we'll kill you, but we know where your family lives, you know, things like that. There are just so many intimidating factors that completely break down the any defenses these poor victims might have. They're just terrified and eventually come to a place of complete submission, and of course drugs is a huge part of that.
In your book, you say that some of the girls that are really young and then they grow a little bit older, at certain ages, you make it seem like they're not going to be useful anymore, like people won't want them. What happens to them after that?
You know, that's just horrifying. I know so many people, when they hear this, they're thinking of women in their 20s or 30s, and all of which is horrible, of course, if they're caught up in this lifestyle. But basically, the younger these victims are, the more money they bring in, the more desirable they are to their so-called clients, which is, you know,
sickening.
Really
perverse.
It is, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes as young as 2 years old, these children are caught up in this. It's horrifying. Now, the prime age is anyone under 10 or 12. That seems to be the most desirable age. Teenagers are still accepted and desired in that age. But once they start to push into their 20s, particularly if they've been in this life for many years, they probably are already looking much older than their age. And as a result, they aren't bringing in the funds that they used to bring. And so very often, especially in other countries, they're put out on the street to fend for themselves. They have no way of knowing how to do this. They have no job skills. They're long since separated from any family or friends or support group who might take them in. Most of them end up begging on the street if they survive that long. Others are simply killed because they're more of a liability than an asset at that point.
Are there any statistics about the girls that do make it out and how they fare afterwards? I mean, I'm thinking of Elizabeth Smart and J.C. Dugard, who were kidnapped, I mean, virtually right in their backyards. And they were basically sex slaves, weren't they?
They absolutely were. And although they may not have been held by organized crime in an actual brothel of sorts, they still, as you said, were sex slaves. And it was just horrific. And it's wonderful that we hear about those who do escape. And it's so encouraging, and I can only imagine the repair work that needs to be done. But we don't have any specific statistics about those who escape, but we do know that those who escape and end up in safe houses or some sort of Christian environment do much better, because obviously there is, at the root of all this, there is a spiritual healing that needs to come. And that's one of the reasons I'm so thrilled to see Christian organizations stepping to the forefront of this, as has always been the case in history, that when there's a horrible social injustice going on, whether it was slavery back in the 1860s or wherever it may be, those in the church are stepping forward and saying, you know, this cannot be, and we have the healer, the deliverer. We can offer the help and healing that these poor, broken survivors need. And they are survivors if they're still alive and they escape. But some of them never really do find the healing they need to go on to any sort of normal life. So when we hear about one or two who does, it's very encouraging. You know, we're very happy about that. But there are so many that even if we rescue them physically, and again, that's just a very small percentage that even get rescued to that extent, most of those who come out, unless they get in really, really good, strong Christian environments for a long period of time, are still so broken that they never really find healing.
Is the government doing enough about this, Kathy? I mean, do they go undercover to expose these cells of people that are doing this?
Well, the government is stepping to the forefront, and I'm pleased about that they have recognized it. As I said, I was in on a conference call with the Department of Homeland Security, who is making this a major push and trying, because they're realizing how bad it is and how fast it's spreading. And what they are actually trying to do that I think is probably the most effective, in addition to educating people for what to look for and how to report it safely so they don't personally get involved but can report it to the right agencies, they have started a coalition of neighborhood and religious, as they call it, neighborhood and religious groups who are fighting this, and that was the conference call I was in on, finding out how many others are involved in this and trying to get us to work together. So they are doing what they can. Is it enough? Absolutely not. It's a drop in the bucket. And again, as I said, I applaud anyone who is trying to fight this, whether from a secular or Christian viewpoint. But unfortunately, as I said, without that, the entire aspect of Christ at the middle of the healing, what they're doing is pretty much putting Band-Aids on this. They are rescuing some, and thank God for it. But as a result, if they don't, even if they get out, if they're not getting that true spiritual healing, what they've basically done is brought them out and thrust them into a society that they no longer know how to exist in or to thrive in. And so most of them really don't go on to healing.
So that's imperative as the follow-up, just like we learned with victims of combat stress. We've got to follow up. We've got to address this post-traumatic stress issue. The follow-up is huge for these people.
It is huge. It's, as you said, that's a great example. I mean, you can't bring someone home whose mind is damaged from having been in those war zone forever and just expect them to immediately make the adjustment. It takes some long-term counseling, and hopefully with, you know, Christ-centered counseling at the center of it, to bring healing to anyone who has experienced such traumatic, you know, mind-boggling, horrific events. And it's just not something that we can just say, okay, now you're fine, you're free, and go on about your life. They don't have a clue how to do that.
What should parents tell their kids in the way of educating them about trafficking? I mean, we don't want to freak them out, you said, so we know that. But what do we need to look for here?
Well, again, we need to be age appropriate. Obviously, you're not going to tell a 3-year-old all the details about this. But when you're, but you certainly, and more than likely when they're that young, you're for the most part supervising their outside activities anyway. But I think they're never too young. If they can understand language, you can begin to talk with them about how important it is never to wander away, never to walk outside the fenced yard, never to do these things without mom and dad knowing about this. And then, of course, as they get older, and especially by the time they hit their teens, I think sometimes at that point it's tougher. They're much more vulnerable because they're at a place where they're going to want to spread their wings and want to be out there, out from under mom and dad's protection, and to be out there with their friends, and yet they're so vulnerable then. And I think maybe a little shock effect is good at that point, because to just sit there and tell them, well, you know, don't take a shortcut down the alley, don't go off somewhere by yourself, it pretty much goes in one ear and out the other. I think maybe they're old enough at that point to maybe see a movie like Taken, or take them to the website for the Department of Homeland Security where they see what's going on. Talk to them about their friends and who to watch out for and why it is that you're insisting on knowing the friends and their families before you give permission for them to go to their homes. They need reasons, because they're at that age where they're questioning everything. And again, maybe a little shock effect is a good thing for them to understand this is not a game. This is not something you can just play with. Once you're captured, we won't know where you are. We won't know how to come and find you. And so I think that it's almost imperative that we just kind of jolt them a little bit with a real strong reality check that says, this is dangerous, this is reality, this is what can happen. So this is why we're doing this. We love you, we want to protect you, and really to surround them with that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I imagine many listeners are shocked to hear such startling statistics and would love to get involved in fighting this awful crime. How would you suggest we go about this?
Well, again, I did mention the Department of Homeland Security's website. If you go and then type in, when you get there, do a search for human trafficking, and you can watch the video. Also, one of the biggest, strongest fighters of this right now is the Salvation Army. It is their number one outreach.
Really?
You can go to their website. Yes, they're very actively involved in this. And so you can go to their website and find out. You can find lists of different groups to get involved in to work with this sort of thing. There are several who are really actively trying to fight this. And the thing I tell people, too, when they want to get involved, if you want to do so on a local level, the first thing you want to do is go to your own pastor, find out maybe we have something going on at our church that I don't know about, or is there, does the pastor know about some other church activity or civic activity in your community that's actually dealing with this? You want to be under the covering of a ministry. This is not a Lone Ranger thing, because it is very dangerous. You don't break down the door if you think there's something going on down the street and try to rescue somebody. Get involved in an existing ministry, whether it's local or whether it's something you find nationally or internationally online. There's a place for everyone, whether it's concerted prayer, whether it's giving financially, whether it's giving some time every week or every month to maybe actually going to a safe house and helping and ministering to these young people, or, you know, donating blankets or food to that sort of a place. There is something that each one of us can do.
Absolutely. I know our church in Florida is just opened a safe house, and this is very, very prominent in Florida. There was a huge raid down there where it was happening right in somebody's neighborhood, and people just kind of noticed that there were all these cars coming and going at all weird hours. And the police did a raid, and that's exactly what they uncovered. So, yeah, the safe house is a great idea, and I think people just getting organized and around their churches and stuff could be a great way to begin if you want to get involved.
Absolutely. Yes, as I said, there's a place for everyone. Just find a safe ministry.
Where can listeners buy your book, and when are the rest of the books coming? You said the third book is about to release?
Yes, Deliver Me From Evil and Special Delivery, the first two books, are out now. And the final book, The Deliverer, will be out August 1st. Many of the stores across the country are carrying them, but if you have trouble finding them there, if they don't have them in stores, they can order them. But you can also get them at almost any online venue, Amazon or any of those. And if they'd like to, they can certainly come directly to my website, which is KathyMacias.com, KathyMacias.com, or boldfiction.com. All the books are there, along with videos that kind of show what they're about. They can click contact and email me if they have more questions. So they can order the books directly there. They can find out what's coming out or where I'm going to be speaking on some of these topics around the country. So that would be my first suggestion. I would love it if listeners would come to the website, get in touch with me, check out what's going on there, and find out how we can partner together in all of this.
Thank you, Kathy. That was great. A lot of good information. I mean, I'm just really burdened by this and really want to get on it myself. I'd like to, try to get involved too. It's just, so hard to believe that this is going on, that people are capable of this, I guess.
I guess that's true. That's what I think about it. It's horrible enough that organized crime, and the people that hold these people captives are just so evil, and yet none of this would be happening if there wasn't a big market for it. There are customers or clients all the time lining up, and that is what just absolutely boggles my mind.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Well, I'll let you know when it's up. I'll send you a note. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right, Kathy.
I'll look forward to finding out. Thank you.
Okay,
so much,
have a good day. All right, bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.